I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Eureka, the show that puts science through its paces and gives it a good old stretch. Going with that one.
You're going with that?
Do you know why I'm going with it?
Why?
Because Ben, who suggested that tagline, also gave us a 5-star review on
Love
Apple
it.
Podcast.
Yeah, we can be bought.
So, yeah, I'm like, that's not a problem. Yeah, he's played the game well there.
Yeah.
Every week we invite a new expert to help us answer one of science's most interesting questions.
Or we don't, and we just answer it ourselves. Which
I think is
a new tagline. Eureka, the show that laughs in the face of science's so-called experts.
Yeah, that's actually quite current as well, isn't it? Or no, it would have been current in like 2015. really bored of experts.
Yeah. I won't come up with another one.
No, go on.
The show that scratches your science itch.
Now, the problem with that is science itch sounds a bit like another show. And I won't go any further than that, but you take my point.
I do.
I'm Rick Edwards.
And I'm Dr. Michael Brooks.
This week we're going to do a bit of biology, mainly because you don't know enough.
Well, I mean, that is fair. I've always said I don't really know. I don't understand why anybody thinks biology is that interesting, to be honest.
Terrible.
I gave it up at 13, so it wasn't even one of my options. It was like I just did physics and chemistry back in the days of, you know, pre-GCSE. Uh-huh. And I just thought it was the least interesting science. It was like all my teacher, Mrs. New, I remember her. She's probably dead now. It was just like label these diagrams. You know, put this label on this cell, yeah. Or, you know.
There's the anther. There's the sepal.
Exactly.
There's the stamen. Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
There was
so
quite a lot
boring.
Of that.
Yeah. So boring.
Can you remember all of your cell labels?
No, because I just wasn't interested. So I didn't ever get to the point where I had to do an exam or a test or anything. I never learnt them.
And that is why in our first book, in the first printing of that book, there is a horrible error where you talk about the cell wall.
Of plants, wasn't it?
No.
No. Oh, yeah, it was animals. Yeah. See, I'm learning a bit now.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
We had a science teacher write to us, didn't we, and say, yeah, this is a horrible mistake.
Yeah, and it was. And I was annoyed I didn't notice.
It was my mistake. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
because yeah, you don't care. Also, I have to say, listeners were shocked to hear. Wrote in massive numbers. Bombarded the show's help desk complaints based on our episode on intelligence when you said you didn't know about the octopus's semi-autonomous arms.
Well, I mean, for a start, that's not true about the listeners writing in, is it?
Well, no, but it should be. They should have written in their droves. But it made me think, what else do you not know?
Well, probably,
I mean,
quite a lot.
Loads.
Yeah, probably quite a lot.
And that is why I set you a challenge, which was to go and find your top five organisms in terms of the sort of evolutionary marvel of them, and then give a kind of show and tell.
Okay.
And then I will
did.
Match
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a top 10, which is what are evolution's greatest hits, and no expert required because
I'm here.
No, I'm here. Evolution via natural selection is one of, if not the greatest discovery of science. Over billions of years, living things have developed new traits purely because of chance mutations in the genetic material contained within their cells. Some mutations confer an advantage in that organism's environment, and the new trait gets passed on. Some confer a catastrophic disadvantage, and the organism doesn't get to pass the trait on down the generations. This random process is how the eye, or something like it, has evolved as many as 40 times over evolutionary history. It's why fish are good at swimming, it's why birds can fly, it's how you've got a lovely big brain that chooses excellent podcasts. Sometimes evolution ends up somewhere totally amazing, though, which is why this week we're asking, what are evolution's greatest hits? So, we've got two rules. One, humans are not allowed. Two, the octopus must win. Let's go. What have you got? Where do you want to start?
I am starting, and I have to confess, I've kind of gone all over the place with these kinds of things. So there's no sort of rhyme or reason to it. It's just
That's fine.
Just an organism that I think is impressive.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I'm starting with the parasitic dodder vine.
That's actually an excellent start.
So obviously that's a plant.
This is the old sniffer, isn't it?
Yeah. It's mad. It's a predatory plant, and you can go for your like Venus flytraps or whatever, and it's like they feel quite vanilla, don't they? But the dodder vine, basically, it's a vampire plant.
Yeah,
because it has almost no chlorophyll, and it just gets energy by biting.
It just sucks stuff out of the stuff, doesn't it?
It's incredible. So it bites into the vascular system, sucks out the sugary sap, basically from that other plant's veins. Yeah. But the amazing thing is, it doesn't just sit there waiting for the plant to come along.
Veins, yep, classic. Yeah. I mean, you do know what you're talking about, don't you?
So there's amazing like time-lapse videos of this thing just sending out tendrils looking for other plants,
I think looking is a bit of a stretch. Right, but yeah.
God damn it.
Searching for
other plants, and like.
But it does. Like I will. Give
it goes
you,
around a corner. Like it knows what's around the corner by sniffing. I guess.
Yeah. And it does those time lapse. I've watched those time lapse videos of the old dodder vine, and it is weird because it does sort of look like it's sniffing out its prey.
Yeah,
and in some senses that is what's happening, but it's really creepy.
But the researchers have found that it will choose, like if it's given a choice, it goes for the healthier plant. So it sniffs out whichever one is healthier, so that it can basically steal more nutrients. So there's nothing like conscious about it. It's just chemical response to whatever chemicals those plants are giving off.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's still cool that evolved.
It's like, you know, plants communicate through smell.
Yeah.
And this is a great sort of visual example of it, or at least in time lapse it is.
Yeah.
So I
don't recommend watching it in real time.
No. I mean, that's the thing with plants. They get a bad press because they're just quite slow workers. Yeah. But if you speed it up, it's fantastic.
This thing hunts.
Yeah.
So that's my first offering.
Yeah.
A plant that hunts.
So I've also, I'm going to go in with a plant as well, because I think it's good to start with plants, because the plants get a bad rep, but they do some amazing stuff. And I know you were trying to disrespect the Venus flytrap. The Venus flytrap's pretty cool, I would argue. The pitcher plant is what I'm going for, because it's basically just got a huge catching bucket for its prey.
For stuff to fall into.
Yeah, for stuff to fall into. And it's got really slippery sides, so then the stuff can't get out. And so I've definitely at some point made you watch the video
the
of one eating a rat.
Yeah, you have, yeah.
I mean, genuinely, when you first hear that, you're like, a plant eating a rat, you're like,
I felt like applauding when I saw that for the first time.
Of course, it's amazing. And there's a specific... The type that ate the rat is called a Nepenthes raja, something like that. And it's in Borneo. And it's absolutely massive. And generally speaking, it's insects who are just sort of wandering in and looking for food. And then they've either got a kind of like really slippery interior, or they've got a load of like really vicious downward pointing spikes.
Of course, because evolution's a bitch like
that. Yeah. And then once it can sense when something has fallen in, and then it will start secreting all of its digestive enzymes, and then it just eats the insects. Or, in the best case, the rat. Or like a lizard. I mean, it effectively is not fussy. If you've fallen in, it'll eat you. I think that's nice.
Yeah, no, you can't. I mean, I sort of feel like if I fell in and I couldn't get out, obviously I'm going to be digested a long time. And during that time, I'm going to be thinking, yeah, fair play.
No, you would, though.
You've done well.
Yeah.
You've really done well.
You've absolutely done me, yeah? Yeah. I've been done by a plant. Okay, so we've had, the dodder vine and the pitcher plant, two very solid contenders.
Right. I am now going for something that I think is amazing in evolution, which is a kind of sociality. So the exploitation of, the relationships between different organisms. So in effect, I'm not talking about one evolutionary organism. I'm talking about when evolution creates a super organism from something. So I'm a
hive or something.
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about driver ants, because I think they're pretty, I mean, they're amazing things. So they are army ants, and obviously being ants, they all have different roles. So there's different sort of roles within the ant colony. These things are just so nails, though. I mean, the bigger ones, sort of the soldier ants, they've been known to take down a chicken, like working together. Can you imagine?
Again, you'd like to see it.
Yeah. Can you imagine being the chicken? It's like, oh, you've done me.
Oh, there's too many of them. They're too coordinated.
So they go around in colonies of like 50 million of them, just like on the march. And they obviously they all have their specialized role within that, and it's just
it's a detailed hierarchy. Can you?
There's so many of them.
50 million of them.
50 million of them. You can hear like a crunch of feet.
Yeah. And really feet. Bad news if you're a chicken. You're like, hold on, what's that? No.
And they move around. Like they don't sort of stay in one place. And they move around with everything, and they set up, they create like subterranean bivouacs. Like they basically create with their own bodies. Some of the ants, it's their job to kind of just become the tent that everybody else shelters inside. So they're just joining up together to sort of create these structures that the ants and the eggs and, you know, the larvae all kind of are protected by. And then the next day they just dissolve it, move on. You know, set up the next place, which is amazing enough. But they climb trees, they cross water, so they can form themselves into bridges. You must have seen videos of this.
I've seen them. Are these the ones that form the raft as well?
Yeah. They can do all of that.
That's excellent.
I mean, it's just so brilliant.
They're like a moving sort of civilization.
Yeah.
With engineers and army guys. And yeah, I mean,
So the soldier ants basically form themselves into like a tube across a river. So they just like climb out, you know, extend out.
Yeah.
And then they get to the other side and there's a bridge and there's a tunnel and everyone else just walks
through
it. Off
you go, guys. Yeah.
It's just insane.
Yeah.
So they are nails, but they also are pretty impressively clever.
Mm. Or sort of, I love that because individually they're not clever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But collectively.
I'd take on one.
Yeah.
Quite happily.
But 50 million.
50 million of them,
no. Take care of business. So... what I'm going to trump that with is another example of sort of a collective organism, but I think is more impressive because people know about ant colonies and that they're pretty amazing, and people know about bees and, you know, it's in the ether. Like people are aware of that.
All right.
I don't think people are aware of slime mold.
Oh, unless they've spent a lot of time with you.
Yeah, because they know me.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
So
part of me is really regretting this episode because it's like revisiting your greatest hits.
Especially my greatest hits, yeah. So they are, I mean, slime mold is so weird. So it's not a plant. It's not a, they're not fungi. They're sort of, we can't really classify them.
Oh, right.
Like, we don't really know.
So Mrs. New wouldn't have been able to, like, make me put a label on them?
Not really.
Like, where do these fit in? Nowhere.
No, because you're going, well,
what's your biology worth now?
They're sort of, they are a bit like fungi, but they're not.
Right.
So immediately I'm like, well, you're doing your own thing, and I appreciate that.
I respect that.
Yeah, of course. So the best description is sort of like an amoeba that makes spores, I guess, but that, right, that's doing them down. Like, they are really weird. So they, and they act as this big blob, moving blob.
See, that's all I think of when I think of slime mold, is just a blob. And I've heard you get excited about it before, but I don't really know why.
So when it's moving around and exploring, immediately, it's mad to think of some mold exploring its environment,
right,
first of all. Like, how the fuck is it doing
that? It's moving.
Yeah, it's moving. And as it does that, it's sort of laying down a chemical trail so that, a bit like Hansel and Gretel, so it sort of knows where it's been, like a trail of breadcrumbs, but some sort of chemicals. And it's like, well, ants do it when they're foraging. They leave trails of pheromones. Same sort of principle. And it will know, oh, we've already been there. We don't need to go back there again. And it's attracted to certain things. So, like, food stuff. So it likes oats. It likes sugar. It likes some protein sources. It doesn't like alkalis. It doesn't like caffeine. It's almost, it will move away from, but I mean, yeah, it just moves towards the things it likes, away from the things it doesn't like.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And it's called, which is called chemotaxis.
I knew that.
You should have said.
I wish I had, nowhere
verifying that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't believe.
Well, actually, because I remember Philippa doing an undergraduate project in chemotaxis.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And I had to listen to her bang on about that.
And it's good. But you can teach. So this is where it gets spicy, right? You can teach the slime mold to approach something it would normally avoid in return for food.
So you
can be like, no, I know you don't like the alkali, but if you come to the alkali, Papa's got some oats.
That's like training a dog.
Yeah, exactly that. It'll remember it for like a year.
That's longer than my dog remembers anything.
How is that slime mold remembering anything?
It doesn't.
Where
have
is
a,
that?
Does it have a brain?
Of course it doesn't have a brain. It's mold. Where is that being sorted?
What are the individual elements of this thing?
They're just like little amoeba, effectively, but they're not. But that's
but they like, operate yeah. collectively.
Yeah.
And they remember stuff together, yeah. but not apart.
No.
So one amoeba wouldn't say...
It doesn't know what the fuck's going on. Yeah.
All right, so this is like magic, effectively.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, we don't understand how they do it. How can you teach mold something? It's mental. It's mental.
I'm starting to get that now.
And you look at mold and you're like, well, it's mold. It's going to be an idiot. Yeah. But there's different types of slime mold. There's one of them that can solve mazes. There's one of the, and can do, you've probably seen this, it can kind of mimic transportation layouts.
I have seen this, and my eyes sort of glazed over. It's like, really? What?
But it can sort of like optimize in the way that we try and optimize transport networks. Again, how, we don't know.
So what do you do? So you have a load of cities.
Yeah.
And you're looking for the shortest path between.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and you set it out so you'd have food sources and stuff. And then
instead
it would
of a city,
out,
it's like
yeah,
food
yeah,
source.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right,
it would okay. figure out the optimal way to get between those in
right.
exactly the way that we would.
And this thing has no brain.
That's right, because it's mold. It can also, so if you give it a load of, if you present it with a load of food,
yeah,
so lots of different options,
yeah,
and some is like good for it and some is not particularly good for it, it will choose the healthiest option, like a really boring person to go to dinner with.
Joking.
Yeah. I'll go, oh no, I'm off carbs at the moment. But it will, whatever the equivalent of that is for slime mold, it will do that. It will go, well, I'll have that.
Can we go back to the maze thing? Like, it solves a maze in that, what, it finds the
get its way out. Yeah.
So it gets out
for
of
example,
a maze.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because I was thinking about going into a Hampton Court maze. And it's like, I've got to find the middle of this. So boring. I mean, I'm just so not interested.
I don't think it. No, I know. But I suppose my point here is. And it's surprised. I mean, did I bring this up when we talked about intelligence? I'm sure I must have done. But I think that slime mold of everything out there makes you question most what intelligence sort of means or what it takes to be intelligent, because it's doing some stuff that you have to concede seems intelligent, and yet we have no comprehension of how or where that intelligence is contained, or how it's processing the information. Because that's what it's information processing. Just don't know how it's doing it.
It's like when you're watching a magician and you think, well, I know it's a magic trick. I know it's not actually magic. It's just a trick. It's sleight of hand or something. And what we don't know is how this thing is doing it.
No,
so exactly. we don't know.
No. And you can do it. So going back to the maze, there's a...
Why are biologists working on anything else?
Well, exactly. So you can chop up. So you can get a big blob of slime mold.
Yeah.
And then chop it up.
Obviously.
Yeah. And to be fair, it can't feel anything. So it's sort of fine.
Yeah.
And then you scatter it through the maze. And then gradually they sort of grow and then coalesce again. And then they will fill the entire thing. And then if you put nutrients at the sort of start and end of the maze, it will effectively, so it's filled the entire maze, and then it just retracts all of the bits that are in dead ends until it just has the path that is the shortest between the start and the end, so where the food is.
Shut up.
I'm not going to shut up.
All right.
So it just grows along the shortest path.
Yeah, love it.
The stuff is sick. I finally
listened to you until you finished talking about this,
and you finally get my point.
Rather than switching off, fair enough.
And in nature, it's out in like a forest floor or whatever, and it is foraging, and again, leaving its trail to avoid the bits it's already been to, and so it must have a kind of, I don't know how you describe this, like a spatial. It's almost got like a spatial memory, but sort of externalized, because obviously it can't have it in its...
It doesn't have a brain to put a memory in.
But by laying that trace out, it knows what the terrain is like, what the environment is like.
So it's got like a search history.
It's labeled it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly that. It's got a search history.
Wow.
So, I mean, I don't know what more to tell you. Slime mold is
I'm impressed.
Extraordinary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm impressed.
And it's done. I'm trying to think what its what sort of town planning is. I think it did like Tokyo's like metro map or something. I can't remember.
Just by finding basically the optimal routes between.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's effectively, it's just like you set it a kind of quite complicated spatial problem, the same spatial problem as Tokyo's metro network, and it will solve it. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do that for like when you have a new town somewhere, you're just like, and over to the slime mold to work out the I think you could do it.
Yeah, so when we built Milton Keynes, we could have just laid it out as a slime mold.
They probably would have done fewer roundabouts.
Yeah, I reckon. Yeah.
So look, I think it's right up there for me, slime mold.
Okay.
Because it's so freaky and so out there and like nothing else, really.
All right.
And seems like it's going to be a dozy cunt as well.
It's definitely one of evolution's greatest hits. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
But I'm also going to bring to you the naked mole rat.
Yes.
Just because I know we've talked about it before.
Yeah, because they don't get cancer.
And they don't get cancer. They also don't feel pain. They live in...
Is that a good thing? Pain's quite useful.
Well, not to them, obviously. But I mean, this is the great thing about evolution, right? So it's not about like, the fact that it's the best at anything, but it's just like evolution...
It's ended up somewhere weird.
It takes these weird turns.
And there's
nothing weirder looking than a naked mole rat. And it has quite a weird life as well. So it basically lives in underground colonies. It's a mammal. But only the queen of the colony can have babies.
Yeah, that's odd, isn't it?
And amazingly, and this is only quite a recent discovery, that she never stops having babies. So she doesn't lose her fertility over time like all other mammals do. She just keeps producing egg cells like throughout her whole life, which is really, really long. So,
but hang on, that's unusual as well, isn't it?
It's massively
producing
unusual.
Egg cells, rather than being
born with them.
You're
supposed to be born with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it turns out evolution has found a different solution to that with the naked mole rat, just gone down a completely different path, because obviously it's a random process, and some of those randomly chosen paths are going to turn out to be fine. And that's what the naked mole rat is. It's like one of those ridiculous paths that you're like, that's never going to work.
Yeah.
And actually it turns out, not only does it work, it works really well.
Pretty well, yeah. Well, that's the other thing about evolution. It will find niches that you don't expect or think exist.
Yeah.
And be like, no, I think we're good here, actually.
Yeah. It's fine. Don't worry about it. So you know, we know from our cancer episode, in fact, that, you know, researchers are really interested in these creatures as means of understanding what is going on with cancer and how we can beat cancer. But they're also now looking at it as, you know, this thing holds the key to maybe fertility treatments. And
presumably a bit of anti-aging stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you're stopping cancer,
they live for so long. Mm. We basically don't see the kind of degradation with age that we see with other mammals. So they've got something going on. And, you know, this ability to sort of keep producing egg cells.
Yeah.
They're born with none and they just, you know... So they're quite cool.
They are quite
different.
They are. They're no slime mold, are they? Be honest. They look funny.
I don't think it's a competition.
It is a competition. They live and, you know, the fact they don't get cancer, cool. But they don't surprise me as much as slime mold.
No,
they're not doing something that actually boggles.
I think you've probably got used to them because you've heard about them for a while.
Maybe. Or you think I haven't been banging on about slime mold for a while. okay, time for a quick break then. I'm going to take on the naked mole rat with my favourite flatworm. We'll get deeper into evolution's greatest hits. I imagine we'll be talking about the octopus at some point.
Yeah, me too.
Is it at the top of evolution's top 10? Yes.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back. So we've just had the naked mole rat, which is just, you know, for me, it's a bit lazy. We talked about them in the Can We Beat Cancer episode. And if we are just bringing up stuff that we've talked about before, which we are, I'm going to go with my...
Planaria, aren't
yes,
you?
I'm going to go with Planaria.
Yeah, okay.
And Planaria are a sort of creepy little flatworm, but they are... The thing about... For me, the thing about Planaria is when you hear about the stuff you can they can do, you think, well, this must be basically just like a... Like a nonsense little thing that can't really, like, not really a proper creature.
Yeah,
and actually, they're complex. They've got a brain. They've got, you know, internal body structure. They've got bilateral symmetry. They look mental. Like, they've got their little eyes, and they quite often look sort of cross-eyed. So they look, you know, those cards, the greetings cards you used to get with the sort of googly eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
They look like that. That their eyes Fantastic. Look like that on a little like worm body. But crucially, they are the great regenerators of the animal kingdom. So they can regrow. You can chop them. Believe me, people are doing it. You can chop these guys up into not quite as many pieces as you like, but and you just have single pieces of them and it will regenerate its entire body from that single piece, brain and all. That is already insane and could be really interesting in terms of regenerative medicine.
Yeah.
Clearly, because it's saying that they somehow still have access to all the instructions on how to grow a full body.
Yeah.
And we think that everything does, but maybe we can't access it.
Yeah.
But maybe we could if we can understand how the Planaria are doing it. But my favourite thing, and I've told you this... Once
yes,
I've told
yes,
you a thousand
yes, you have.
Times.
I'm like, do you know what I'm thinking
but
at the moment?
Good, but it's still good, though.
What I'm thinking at the moment is, why the fuck didn't I choose Planaria? Because I could have taken this off you,
yeah,
and then you'd have, would, had to, have, you'd have to work have, a bit harder.
That would have annoyed me, actually.
Yeah, it would.
But the thing is, and I'm sorry if I'm boring anyone here, but actually I'm not sorry. If you take a Planaria and you've trained it, and you can train them to... Sort of, I mean, nothing complicated, to be fair. It's not fucking balancing a ball on its nose. But, like, to know that if it goes into a light, it's going to get food, and if it goes into the light, it's not, whatever. Yeah, something simple like that. Yeah. It will have that memory. Now, I chop off a bit of the Planaria that does not have its brain in it. I then grow a whole new Planaria from it, and that new Planaria remembers the thing that I've taught it.
Put that together with a slime mold,
and
we've really got
something. You really have. So this guy, I've taught it something. It's presumably storing that memory. You'd think it's storing that memory in its brain. Oh, no, it isn't, because somehow, without the brain, it's regenerating, and it remembers.
Yeah, okay.
What the fuck? What the fuck? And also, it's effectively got like an endless lifespan. Because you can just, like, it just keeps on, like, it just keep regenerating.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not giving
things
you...
Things are insane.
I'm not giving you credit for this. Like, this is evolution's greatest hits, by the way, not Rick Edwards' greatest hits.
But so. I am its greatest champion. You don't hear anyone talk about Planaria more than me.
No, that is very true, and something I'm very grateful for.
okay, so I think... I mean, I know that this isn't a competition, but I feel like I'm winning.
You turn everything into a competition, don't you?
Ideally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas I'm more chilled than that. More basically got a bit more sort of reserve, a bit more self-confidence. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so I am now going for numbers. So you know, I've gone for various different things. One thing that really impresses me is just sheer like abundance on the planet. In terms of, you must be doing something right if evolution has created, has resulted in you having this many of you around. So I could go for bacteria, obviously, but they're just so simple and boring. They don't really count. I mean, there's a lot of them. Like, you're talking like 10 to the 28 sort of SAR-11 bacterial cells in the sea.
Yes,
but they're just not that interesting. So they're not going for them. could go for chickens because there's 18.6 billion domestic chickens.
I would be very, very surprised if you're going to go chickens.
But I'm not going chickens.
In evolution's greatest
hits. Because I know that you're turning this into a competition. Yeah. And, you know, and so we're not having that. They're just chickens, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I'd go for something.
They get
I learned
taken down by some ants.
Yeah, exactly. I thought I'd go for something I learned about fairly recently. So I was reading a book called The Crystal Desert, which is about Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of... And it talked a lot about krill, and I realised I didn't really know much about krill at all, apart from seeing them in sort of David Attenborough documentaries.
Yeah, getting chowed back by whales.
Yeah, basically. So there's 500 trillion of these in the world's oceans.
Oh, that is a success
That's
story.
That's numerous,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay. Like 400 million tons of krill. Fucking and I was hell. Thinking, oh, you know, they're small, aren't they? But actually, in terms of like, creatures that they're just average size. If you average out the size of a krill and average out the size of all the creatures on Earth, they're sort of like the average size of a creature. And
hold on,
500 trillion of them.
But that average is getting massively pulled down by a lot of pecker things, isn't it?
Like what?
Well, like, I mean, presumably we're talking about, like, bacteria there, aren't
we? Well, I don't think we're including bacteria in that. I'm not sure. I'd have to check that.
Okay.
But basically, what was, you know, I always thought, it was microscopic, so of course, you know, but they're not microscopic. Some of them are really quite big.
Well, how obviously. Big are they? How big?
Like 6 centimetres, some of them.
Really?
Like you get,
yeah, that is, that yeah, is genuinely yeah, surprising. Yeah, I'd yeah. assume that they're all like...
Do you think of them as tiny little
things, I think
things,
of them as
you?
Being like Daphnia. Do you know Daphnia?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the things you used to feed to your fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not
which
like
are
that.
Sort of like little water fleas.
So some of them are like
so
that.
So some of them... But
they can grow up to...
Up to 6 centimetres.
6 centimetres.
Well, I apologise,
it's like a little
krill.
Shrimp, isn't it?
Yeah.
Basically. It's a little shrimp. And and they're cool. So the other thing I learned about these, obviously spent a bit of time reading, is that sometimes you get super swarms of krill... And you can see them from space.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll give you that's cool.
That is cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you're such a success as an organism that, like, you gang together and you can wave at the satellites.
Presumably
metaphorically.
And also quite deep. Like, they're not, it's not like they're swimming around on the surface, is it?
No. So these are swarms that are, like, tens of kilometres wide and about 100 metres deep.
Yeah, I like that.
So it's like a massive, I mean, you can see why the whales are attracted, right? It's like, oh, there's lunch.
Yeah.
So, and of course, yeah, they're a crucial part of evolution's work. So the biggest animal that's ever lived, Antarctic blue whale, depends on krill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they're, you know, in terms of evolution's greatest hits, it might not work terribly well for the krill to be eaten all the time. But actually, you know, they're a kind of really crucial part of the whole, you know, they're taking one for the team, effectively.
Yeah. How many krill is a blue whale eating?
Oh,
don't think I phrase that very well, but you know what I mean.
3.6 million per day is the figure I've
got. It's decent.
Probably not all 6 centimetres.
No, you can't. Oh, you get a hell of a stomachache on that. Yeah.
But I mean, so they eat them for like 6 months of the year, migrate, don't eat.
I bet they reproduce really quickly.
Yeah. Of course they do.
I bet that is not making any sort of
be trillions.
You don't have 500 trillion of you if you're fucking about it reproduction wise.
So I just thought, in terms of like abundance and dominance of kind of the whole sort of natural story, effectively, I think krill are up there.
Yeah. Yeah. Number is good. And the fact that they're. Yeah, so, yeah, sort of vital in the food chain. I suppose my only criticism is they're not actually doing anything particularly. They're just sort of, they just are. And I feel like everything else that we've spoken about is doing some cool stuff that's slightly surprising.
These guys
is just fucking loads of them.
But I pull them in because I think evolution has done something clever there. Yeah, I mean, it's just like...
Provided a food source.
And, you know, it's not going away. And we're starting to eat krill now. Anyway, so I think the fact that, you know, evolution has sort of brought these things along, they get eaten in massive numbers, but that's okay, you know, for the species.
Eaten in massive numbers brings me on very nicely to what I'm going to put in next. Now, this is slightly unadventurous, but I think there's something about this as a story. Wheat. So instead of, you know, oh, what's the impressive, you know, apex predator? what about the concept of apex prey? So something where, like, we really want to eat wheat and are very dependent on wheat.
Yeah.
And what that has meant is that wheat has gone from being one of just many wild grasses growing in the Middle East. So this is like 10,000 years ago.
Yeah.
To now being spread entirely, like, across the entire globe. And it has us, in some ways, working for it in terms of its dominance and abundance. Because we are, almost like turned us on to agriculture.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you, this is an argument that that what's his face makes in Sapiens. And to be fair, I don't think I like that book very much, but I like this bit.
Harari.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Where he says, you know, humans are cultivating the wheat, and have consequently developed, you know, back problems and ail. Like when you first go from being nomadic hunter gatherers to being a guy who is just like working the fields to grow wheat, it's horrible for you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're like a slave to this. Yeah,
imagine
stuff.
What you'd be like if you had to be a farmer.
Oh, I'd be awful. So you start farming. You're fixed in one place. You're weeding, you're ploughing, you're sowing seeds, you're carrying water to water the little fuckers. And so, and the wheat is just
wheat's laughing.
Proliferating.
Yeah.
And you're just, you are in service of the wheat, and there is nowhere that isn't growing wheat.
Nowhere on the planet that isn't growing wheat, basically.
No, not really.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible success story where, I mean, I suppose where it slightly falls down is clearly there's no sort of the wheat is entirely passive in this.
Yeah.
Humans have picked wheat, I guess, and decided to run with it.
Well, you could argue really that, you know, there's some kind of selfish gene thing going on there where
maybe
the wheat's selfish gene effectively is causing it to be terribly desirable to the very creatures that are going to spread it around.
Yeah.
And cause it to proliferate.
It does feel like in the relationship between humans and wheat is probably the winner. Do you know what I mean?
Especially if you're gluten intolerant.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've got something that's related to that.
Bit left field.
No, I like it. This is my sort of ace card that I'm going to play, which is fungi.
Of course it is, yeah.
Because you know I read that book.
Yeah.
Entangled Life. It just blew my mind.
By Merlin Sheldrake.
Yeah.
It is excellent. It's really good.
So all I'm going to do is basically hit you with some fungus facts. Which...
You still talking to his dad, by the way?
We'll save that for another episode, shall we? On Rupert Sheldrake and where science went wrong with Rupert Sheldrake.
Poor old Rupert Sheldrake.
Can be our expert that's not an expert.
Mm-hmm.
The largest living thing on Earth is a fungus.
I think I know. This is quite a sort of pub quiz.
Yeah, yeah. I don't mind that.
But it's good. It's good.
Yeah, it's the honey mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
It lives in the Blue Mountains of Oregon and covers 2,384 acres.
And it's horrible, isn't it? Because it basically eats trees.
Yeah. It's not a great thing to have around.
Mm.
But that's fungus for you. Bit of a sort of, you know, maverick, really.
It's also fucking old, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's at least 2,400 years old, possibly 8,650 years old.
So biggest and oldest living thing
by a country mile.
It's not even close, is it?
Yeah.
And it is a single
organism over 10 square kilometers, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, quite cool.
That is insane. Yeah. Then there's the wood wide web.
Of course, yeah.
Where fungi are supposed to, although there's been some doubt cast on this, lots of researchers pointed to the idea that fungi in the soil enable trees and plants to communicate with each other, warn each other about predators, that kind of stuff. And there was a paper out a couple of weeks ago, I think, I read this in New Scientist, people saying, you know, those studies aren't really very reliable. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, and the reliable studies aren't quite so sort of positive about the kind of the connective sort of social networks that fungi
facilitate.
Yeah, so I sort of feel like I might have to take that one away.
Okay.
But here's something fun. Most of the raindrops in tropical forests are seeded by a fungal spore. So 90% of the raindrops that fall on the forest have a fungal spore at their heart. So these spores obviously are released up into the air. They seed condensation of mm-hmm. water, mm-hmm. which accumulates mm-hmm. into drops and then falls back. So the spore is brought back down and can, you know, do its thing. So basically rainforests are rainforests because of the fungi that live in them, which is amazing.
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know, this is just pub quiz facts now. So you've got like 1 teaspoon of soil. Researchers have measured 8 miles of fungi filaments in a single teaspoon.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I don't really care about that kind of thing.
Okay.
Talk to me about...
zombie ants.
Zombie ants, yeah. we know that's where we're moving towards.
Yeah. The cordyceps thing. Yeah. I mean, this is just mad.
Which is what that TV show that everyone's raving about is based on. Yeah. Have you watched it?
I've watched half of it. Yeah.
That's the sort of premise, isn't it?
So it basically just takes over a carpenter ant.
Yeah.
And turns it into a zombie, doesn't it? And then its body is controlled. And the Last of Us opens with this as kind of this is what goes on, could happen to humans.
Yeah.
And that's the whole premise of it. And then, so the insect has just been taken over. It moves to a plant. Clings to the plant
at exactly the right height
to release, and then the fungus just consumes the ant from the inside out.
Yeah,
pokes a stalk through its head.
Yeah,
and which then releases a capsule of spores, which then rain down on other ants.
Takes them over, and off we go.
Off we go again.
Nice little cycle.
Yeah,
unless you're an ant. Yeah,
it is mad though when you start to sort of read about this, and the stuff in Sheldrake's book is just sort of ridiculous. So he says like things like research shows that if you grow strawberries with different kinds of fungi in their environment, you can taste the difference between these different strawberries. So it's the fungi that kind of that produce the growth of certain scents and oils and stuff. So you kind of optimize your strawberries by the fungi that grow with them. And going back to wheat, fungus obviously grows on wheat. Mm-hmm. And the type of fungus that's in the wheat survives to influence the taste of a loaf of bread that is made. So they've done these tests where you make loaves of bread with different, the same wheat flour, but just grown with different fungi in. And you can do taste tests and you can tell the difference.
They'll taste different.
Yeah, they'll taste different because of the fungi. Mm. And he actually makes...
When we eat a lot of stuff based on fungi.
Yeah. And he makes the point that actually maybe the fungi are what's controlling us rather than... You know, so you talk about the wheat controlling us, but he says, you know, that nothing happens in our processes, you know, whether we're brewing beer or making bread, without the fungi getting fed first.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah,
like
yeah.
You feed the fungus and it gives you some bread as a reward.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it's just like this.
I think when we're talking about evolution's greatest hits, I wonder if it's we're talking about an entire kingdom here.
Yeah, it's true. We've gone big, haven't we, in terms of vagueness.
Next up for me is animals in that case. But... Yeah,
but you know what do I know? I don't know how to put a label on a cell diagram. So, no, you know,
very, very true. Actually, I would mention the plastic eating fungus because I think that's pretty.
Yeah,
that could be
cool.
Very significant.
Yeah,
for the future.
I mean, that's not evolution's greatest hits. That's us just using evolution, isn't it? But they can.
Yeah, but the digest fact that it's incredibly useful. We could be grateful for that.
Do you know Lego is made using fungi?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Really?
It's in the dye or something, or some of the chemicals that go into Lego is produced from fungus.
Well, they're in lots of plastics.
I think so, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
We should do a whole episode on fungi, to be honest, with a proper expert. Yeah, maybe we should.
Yeah.
We'll get Merlin.
Yeah, let's try and get Merlin.
It's a great name. okay, so we've had 9 entrants now, have we?
Yes, we have. I think we all know what's coming now, don't we?
Have we forgotten any? My old friend, the octopus.
I don't even really feel like I need to run through it all.
I think I've said all I need to say about the octopus. I love those eight limb little fuckers. I think they're incredible.
Yeah, obviously now I know that each arm has its own mini brain, so that's quite clever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they've got, yeah, their brain is, it's not even like they're so alien. It's not like they've got lots of different brains, which I think we might find sort of slightly easier to comprehend.
Yeah.
Because you have those, like, you see that in, which dinosaur is it that's got the brain at the very top of its head and then the sort of mini brain down its back because it's so far to communicate? Like, you know, little multiple sort of brain bits. The octopus is just like distributed throughout its body, effectively. Yeah. It's got a fully, like, its whole body has brain in it.
Yeah.
Mad.
Yeah.
And yeah, its limbs are semi-autonomous. They're like super smart, but in a way that is just different to everything else. It's not very easy to test their smarts because in quite a lot of instances, they're just not really that interested in cooperating.
They're too smart to be tested.
They're just like, oh, fuck off. I'm not doing that. That's not really my vibe. They use tools. We know that they use tools.
Coconut shells
to protect themselves. And they bring them. We've talked about this before. They bring the coconut shells with them to subsequently protect them, which means they must be planning ahead and sort of have a sort of sense of the future and what dangers might be out there. They can solve various puzzles if they want to.
Yeah.
They can famously get out of, like, unscrew. You can whack them in a jam jar.
And they'll unscrew the lid.
They'll unscrew the lid. Yeah, no problem at all.
And there was that one that escaped from the aquarium in New Zealand, wasn't there, and got out and just went into
got into a soil pipe and just went out into the ocean. There's one that would get out of its tank and then hop into, basically they had crabs in an adjacent tank and they couldn't work out, I think it's crabs, they just couldn't work out where these crabs were going. And then it puts some CCTV in and the octopus is like slipping over in, eating a crab and then going back. I mean, it's lovely stuff. they can recognise people. So they'll dislike some people. Some people, inexplicably, they'll just be like, don't like this one, squirt water at them when they come past.
Love it.
Which is
love
very
it.
Nice.
They don't need a reason.
No, of course you don't. They're by and large they're solitary, but we have found places where they've sort of built little conurbations. So there's one called Octopolis. That's very good. And they have like wrestling matches in the middle that look to be just them.
Why? No,
well, that's the thing. It looks like they're just having fun. You can't figure out any purpose because they're not trying to be dominant over one another as far as we can tell. So after the fight, they'll just go back to their bit and just hang out. So they're just like having a nice time. God,
what would you give to know the reason behind that?
I know.
Like, who started this?
Impossible for me to pick, I think, the best thing, the most surprising
and
thing.
And you don't have to.
But if I did have to, I might go with their ability to disguise themselves. So there's the mimic octopus.
Yeah.
If you've never looked at some footage of the mimic octopus doing its thing, like, you can't understand it. So it's so convincing. So it can make itself look like rocks, it can make itself look like a bit of coral, it can make itself look like a lionfish, it can make it like it just you look at it and go, but how and also we don't think octopuses can see in color but they're camouflaging themselves in color and pattern and texture they can do.
I've seen that,
so
I mean, you give the credit obviously to the octopus. I give the credit to evolution and say that is an amazing thing to have evolved.
Well, it's all evolution. Evolution.
So it's just an amazing thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
They can sometimes they'll disguise themselves as their own predators, so that the predator doesn't. Because so the predator's like, oh no, that's another sea snake.
It's like I'm looking in the mirror.
Yeah, I'm not going to eat the sea snake. Obviously, where did that octopus go?
In terms of entertainment value, they win hands down.
Oh, gotcha.
Arms down, whatever.
By an absolute mile. So that, I sort of rest my case. I mean, yeah. It was inevitable. It was only ever going to end this way.
I mean, it was in the setup, but
yeah.
But it's true that you'd rather spend time with an octopus than a fungus.
Yeah. And I think just in terms of time on an entirely different path from anything else, evolving its own intelligence, the octopus is the one. It is the most interesting animal in terms of its evolution.
Yeah, okay. Well, haven't I learned something?
Yeah, well, yeah.
And haven't I relearned a lot of stuff as well?
You've had a lot of stuff confirmed. So just a quick reminder of the greatest hits that we've just cycled through. So we had the parasitic dodder vine. Absolutely lovely. Sniffs out its prey. The pitcher plant can eat a rat if it wants to. Driver ants can take down a chicken. slime mold can solve mazes and is mental because it's mold. How is it doing that? Can also produce the Tokyo subway map. Naked mole rats don't get cancer. Quite impressive. Planaria can regenerate themselves and can regenerate memories without having the brain. I can't even begin to approach that.
It's not Krill, start again.
Yeah, yeah. Krill, there's loads of them. Wheat, gone from being a bit part grass to being the main one in the world. Not bad. Fungi, granted, entire kingdom, but still doing some amazing stuff. And then the king of all living things, of the octopus, because it's the octopus. Eureka is a Stack production presented by Dr. Michael Brooks and Rick Edwards. The production team is Temi Adebayo, Katie Baxter, Luke Moore and Charlie Morgan. Sound design by Katie Baxter. Special thanks to today's expert, Rick Edwards. Please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It does make a massive difference. We also really love hearing from you guys. So if you have any burning questions you want us to answer, drop us an email at eureka@stack.london, or you can find us, as always, on Twitter at EurekaPod.
Eureka is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.